Hello, and welcome to the Commander Theory Podcast. I'm Nick Beatman, and today Zach is off in the mountains, but we've got a very special guest with us. We've got Andy from the Legendary Creature Podcast. So welcome back to the show, Andy.
Hey, can I say the line, though?
Yeah.
Hello, theorists. Yes, dude. Okay, all right, I did it.
Awesome. So yeah, super glad to have you back. And we got a fun topic today. We're going to be doing the latest installment in our custom commander reviews. So a couple weeks ago, we asked for submissions on the Tumblr and on Twitter and on our Discord. And we got a lot of really interesting custom commanders. The theme this time was Universes Beyond. So these are all takes on characters from other properties. And so we're mostly going to, I'm mostly going to be focusing on the, like, whether these designs open up new archetypes and enable new cards to be played in Commander, but we'll give some bonus points for whether it, like, accurately captures the flavor of the character. So I think we can jump right in. Is there anything you want to say before we start on this, Andy?
No, we can kick it. So we're just covering, like, just different IPs and stuff, like totally just Universes Beyond stuff.
Yes. There's going to be video game, a lot of video games.
Yeah.
Some, like, book series, anime, lots of different media properties, not all of which I'm totally familiar with. So I did have to do a little research before this episode, but I think we can get to it. All right, this first design comes to us from Opal Osprey on Tumblr. This is Suwako, Native God. It is 2BB for a 4/4 legendary creature god with indestructible, and she has Native God's Scourge. Whenever you cast a curse spell that targets only a single opponent, copy that spell for each other opponent the spell could target. Each copy targets a different one of those opponents. So this character comes to us from Toho, just like a... I think it's like a bullet hell shooter with a lot of cute anime girls. So clearly this is a curse commander. Do you have any experience with, like, curse decks or with Lind, the Grixis curse commander from Midnight Hunt?
We haven't run into Lind yet in my play group, but we've definitely had some attempts at curses. I think the closest we got with something that seemed... Curses are hard. They're hard.
Yeah.
We used kind of like Arden for a second. We had like a Naya Jund combat partnership. It was Tana and Arden because he can move the auras around. So there was some kind of negotiation between turns of like, hey, I'll leave the curse here or I'll move the curse there. But that's even cool. Still, it's a really hard archetype to get under.
Yeah. My friend Bryce has tried extremely hard to make Lind work, but, you know, she tends to die a lot, and the curse rewards she offers aren't amazing. You know, if a curse falls off or gets destroyed while she's on the battlefield, then you can return it to your hand.
Yeah.
And then she wants you to curse yourself and then give the curses away to draw cards. But I just don't think she really solves the inherent problems in curses. Which is that,
like, they tend to be steps. Like, there's a lot of steps.
Yeah, they tend to also be kind of like slower, grindy value. Like, it often takes multiple turns for you to really get them going, or like get a lot of value off of them. And also, just like oftentimes you're like giving away value too. A lot of them say, like, you know, whenever a player hits this opponent, that player gets something, and then, or maybe that player gets something and you get something too. So you're giving away resources, and you're also like pissing people off like crazy. Like, folks do not like to get cursed.
Right.
But this, what do you think of like this take on curses, the Suwako that Opal Osprey submitted?
Yeah, like I like that we didn't just go five color. I mean, that seems to be like a solution for a lot of like limited card types, like thinking about mutate or anything where like we just don't have like a high density of just the card existing or like a variety. But then we're like in Sultai now where, yeah, like some of my favorite curses, and I say favorite meaning like they're quite effective, are in Red and White. Like, I think Curse of Exhaustion is a real good curse to put on somebody. It'll lock them down pretty hard. And then if you can move it around, I guess I'm thinking of just my experience with Arden, where it's like, all right, I'll take it off of you if you XYZ, is kind of how it played out for us. But Sultai is a really strong color combination, though. So the space between the curses is well lubricated with this identity, I think.
I feel the same way. Just for reference, in the Grixis color identity, there's 31 curses. Mm-hmm. And in Sultai, there's only 24 curses. And a lot of those red curses you're missing out on. Some of them are bangers. Like, I really like Curse of Hospitality. I like Curse of Bloodletting, Curse of Opulence. There's some pretty good ones that
Curse
you're
of Opulence
missing.
Is actually bomb. That's a bomb card. Even if you're not even really care too much about curses.
For sure. So you're missing out on some good stuff. I am assuming that this has something to do with the character, and that's why they got this color identity. But, you know, if you're focusing on like enabling an archetype, you do want to make sure you got the right colors to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I do like that she's indestructible, because I don't think that what she's doing is like super powerful. So
yeah,
it's not,
let's keep her around. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like incredibly impressive to have this commander be indestructible, because she's forcing you to like build around curses, and you can usually just deal with those instead. What do you think of this second ability, the copying your curses and sticking them on more opponents?
I mean, that's definitely a way to get more mileage out of your permanent. I'm wondering, like, would it be crazy here to, because a lot of the gods have some kind of transformative design where, you know, like the Theros gods, they're not a creature until we're at a certain level of devotion, right? Or the Amonkhet gods were, hey, I'm not even going to be able to attack or block for you unless some condition is met, right? Like Ronus, I think you need to control like a 4 or something. And then the other ones I'm thinking is aren't there some from like Baldur's Gate or something that they became indestructible if your life total was, were they
half.
Gods, those guys?
Yeah. There were 3 of them, the death gods.
And yeah.
I think if an opponent's life total is like half their starting life total, then they become indestructible. I think that's how they work.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, would it be insane to have some type of like, well, hey, all my opponents are cursed to a certain point, and then she transforms and now it's like an overdrive, because you're already pissing 2 people off. They're both cursed.
Yeah.
And my thought is they're going to be coming your way. You have an indestructible blocker, but I really like, and it's not always ideal, especially when like opponents start falling off the board. Like, this is a problem with like some of the poison commanders that we just saw, that some of those early Boros legends from sets way back where, you know, my life totals or my opponent's life totals are a certain state and I just go haywire. But I like the idea of, okay, I've cursed enough of the population, the table population, and she does what gods do, transforms into some new thing, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
I don't think it's broken as is right now. I'm like, this is pretty reined in, honestly, this legend to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that like curses are inherently kind of weak, and we don't get new ones very often.
And we're down to like 24, is that what you said, or 22?
24 in this color identity, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So I think that I like the idea of having that extra mode. You could tie the indestructibility to that and just say, like, you know, as long as an opponent is cursed, she has indestructible, that kind
of thing. Okay, yeah.
I like, one nice thing about the indestructibility on her is just that, like, because the way this design works is, like, you first have to cast your commander, and then you untap, and then you get to start playing Magic. Like, it's really not worth it for you to play your curses before you get her down. So it's good that the indestructibility like helps her stick around long enough for the second ability to be relevant.
Yeah.
Okay. Any last thoughts on Suwako, or do you want to move on to the next commander?
Well, let's hit the next one. All right. Let's just hope that, you know, we get some curses and a broader color identity, and then I would not be shocked if we got new legends that kind of align with something like this pretty close. I like the idea of twinning them, though.
Yeah,
make them, I'm like super cursed.
Maybe the next time we go back to Amonkhet, that's like a really flavorful. I mean, they had a bunch of curses last time we were there. It's really flavorful. And one thing we never saw that I was really expecting to see is the thing that like reanimates every person on the or everything on the plane as soon as it dies is called the Curse of Wandering.
Oh, wild.
Yeah. So like that seems like it could be a natural starting point for like a high end curse design. But maybe next time we go back.
And then they can do a Universes Beyond Secret Lair, the Mummy, and just call it Curse of the Mummy.
Perfect. All right, let's move on to the next commander. This is Cerno Freezing Fairy, and apologize if I get any of these pronunciations wrong. So this is one blue red for a legendary snow creature fairy. She's a 2/2 with flying, and she has Rising Motivation. Whenever a spell or ability you control taps one or more untapped non-land permanents an opponent controls, you may draw a card. And she also has Perfect Freeze. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, Cerno deals damage to that player equal to the number of tapped non-land permanents they control. Okay, what do you think about Cerno?
Just looking at the character, it's an ice fairy, so doing the... What are they doing with these now? Stun counter type? The tap doesn't untap?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Language. I don't know if we've kind of like codified that all the way, but it seems to fit the character pretty well, that first line. And then, yeah, that last bit, I think, is us just trying to do something with that tapping state, right? Like, we're
influencing life totals. Providing a win condition.
Right.
I think this design might be a little bit pushed at 3 mana because it is providing both the draw engine and kind of the win condition. So I think it could probably either stand to cost, like, one more mana or maybe... change up the second ability, because I think most people can find a way to win once they're doing the thing where, okay, I'm tapping down your guys so they can't attack me, and I'm drawing cards as a result. Like, that sounds like a very strong defensive engine. Well, yeah, and removal magnet. You're going to annoy the hell out of people.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to suffer Cyrano to live very long if I was under this deck.
For sure. Yeah, it's she's not going to... We're going to see a couple oppressive commanders today. I'll say that much. but I like that she's opening up this archetype. Like, there's not really a tapping down deck at the moment. So you can just run, you know, a bunch of stuff like Opposition, Gadwick, Nibbless of Frost, these things that like could be easily allow you to tap things down. Tiller Engine is cool. Giga Drowse and Bluster Squall both seem really sick. Just tap a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Draw a bunch of cards.
There's a partner that cares about tapping stuff, right?
Let me see. There is Timon and Rhoda. They have partner with. They were the blue-white alternate commanders from the Crimson Vow Spirits precon.
Yeah.
They're not very good, though. Like, Rhoda has the ability, it's like whenever a creature an opponent controls becomes tapped, if it wasn't attacking, just put a +1/+1 counter on her.
Right.
So, like, the reward is definitely a lot weaker than what we're seeing on Cyrano.
Yeah, it's, I've played against one, like, I've played against a deck, that Tim and Rhoda deck, and it's definitely, like, feels like a tapping Voltron, where it's just loaded with ways to shove blockers down, but then you're getting counters at the same time. And then the Timon is the one that actually does the tapping, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
that, but it's that a lot of mana to get there, so you almost never cast it. I don't think I remember the player ever like putting that one out of the zone. It was just relying on the cards mana? It's a little bit just to get a couple taps in, I think, is what it ends up doing. But it's Bluster Squall and everything you kind of already listed off, like Nibbless of the Frost and all of the other tapping abilities to set up Rhoda. But these are more mana than what we're seeing here, and in blue white. So it's pretty... Yeah, you're right. I think this should probably be higher mana if we're going to have draw damage and a way to like incentivize controlling creatures on the same card.
Yeah. But it seems pretty sweet. I like the flavor, like, you know, having a snow creature that is tapping things down feels really flavorful. I don't know much about Cerno, but so I'll let the listeners provide feedback on like how well it captures the flavor of this character. But seems like a neat card. I would just fiddle with the knobs a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I really like tapping down though, like it's incentivizing doing it, because there's just a huge, it's such a blue ability, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much of it.
Yeah, there's so many cards that would just become much better or like become playable in Commander. Just, you know, dumb little cantrips, tap something, draw a card, become actually pretty darn sweet when you have this Commander out.
I think flavor wise, we nailed it here though. Like, I don't know anything about it, but like just looking at the wiki, like, yeah, all right. If this was a Magic card, I would expect it to think about tapping. So pretty cool.
All right. Let's move on to the next one. This comes to us from Kaidel on Discord. So this is Guido Mista, Ace Marksman.
It's wild.
So this is a JoJo character. It's one blue red for a 4/1 legendary creature, human warrior. When it enters the battlefield, create 6 colorless 0/1 spirit stand creature tokens named Sex Pistols.
What the? Okay, keep going. Well,
are you familiar with JoJo?
I am. Yeah, that's why I'm okay. Just like, what right. The hell? Yeah. Keep going.
All right. You can tap one stand creature token you control to choose new targets for target spell or ability. If that spell or ability deals damage, it deals that much damage +1. And then you can tap 4 stand creature tokens you control to choose new targets for target spell or ability and copy that target spell or ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. So, I did a little research on this character. Like, this character can like redirect bullets, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
So like redirection definitely feels flavorful for this.
Right.
But wow, this seems incredibly strong.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Guido?
Well, I just was even just hanging on the first ability. I'm like, where's that Nymph Death Mantle?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the rest is like, I guess I'm just going to make this really bad. Because isn't that, I'm just there, right? With the rest of the abilities, Nymph Death Mantle and Ashnod's.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm there in a color identity that can pretty well put that together.
Yeah, and it just offers sort of the built-in protection against your opponent's like spot removal, trying to...
Right, interfere. Right. I think if I wanted to rein this in, I would think how we get the stand tokens probably should be some other way rather than like an enter the battlefield. Like, we just, you know, this barrel of monkeys that comes ready to go seems kind of a lot.
I would want to maybe just like, why not just have them be counters on Guido? And that gets around the Nymph Death Mantle thing. There's still like some play to it. Like, you can blink Guido to refresh him or like proliferate him. But that way you also just don't have like 6 blockers or 6 pieces of sack fodder, or just all these other like, or just like, God, if you get a skull clamp out, it's just, you go crazy.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Right.
So I think that'll rein it in a bit. And then
you got 6 bullets in the chamber, dude. That feels pretty good.
And then I definitely think we gotta work on the activated abilities here. Cause just 6 redirects for free is like, okay, I'm just not going to be able to play spot removal this game. That's kind of how it feels.
Yeah. Right. That's a lot of deflecting swats.
Yeah.
And then plus a deflecting swat in the hand.
Yeah. So I'd probably want to add like a mana cost on this, like, you know, pay some amount of mana, remove a stand token from, or a stand counter from Guido to redirect something. That seems fine. It's also getting kind of wordy here. Like, as it stands, this card is 11 lines of text. I think you could probably just like cut the last ability and just have it be, comes in with some number, with 6 counters, spend a mana, expend a counter to redirect something. And I think that would be like fine. It is, I will note that like this type of design is really dependent on what your opponents are doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they're just like playing completely uninteractive, fun, fair magic where I just like, you know, play a bunch of creatures and buff them up or something, this card could like do almost nothing. So that's something to think about. I like the idea of playing it with a couple things that like being targeted.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have like Goldspan Dragon, whenever it becomes a target of a spell or ability, you get a treasure, or like Willbreaker, whenever
gain control.
Yeah, whenever a creature opponent controls becomes a target of a spell or ability you control, you can gain control of it for as long as Willbreaker remains on the battlefield. And Storm Tracer Drake, like you draw a card when it comes to target of a spell or ability you control. So the neat thing you can do, and this wouldn't probably be super efficient if we do add the mana gate on that counter ability, but I kind of like the idea of just like spending these redirects to like, you know, I cast like an expedite on my Goldspan Dragon, and then I expend a stand to switch the target from Goldspan to like Guido or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then I spend another stand to switch it back to Goldspan Dragon. Goldspan triggers again, and I get another I get another treasure, and just like flipping it back and forth. But if we're maybe this tech doesn't work out so good if we're like severely restricting that redirection. But if we just redesigned that part of the card so it can only redirect your abilities, then we could afford to be like way more aggressive with the costing. Like we could just have it be tap a stand or remove encounter with no ability or with no mana cost.
Right.
If you're only redirecting your own abilities to like do these fun kind of things.
Because then I guess you're not being so
oppressive.
You're right. Like you're not so opaque. Because I can only redirect my own stuff. Yeah. This character and this redirect ability, I really like the idea of having a bag full of redirects. It's probably my favorite red ability. Mm. And I think there's like a few blue ones that do it, but I love the look on the opponent's face, you know, when I was doing like Bolt Bend before the deflecting SWAT was such a staple. So this card I like a lot. It's just, I think we've kind of pinpointed a lot of, you know, it's either going to be really open-ended and oppressive and opaque, or it's really weird and constrained in.
Yeah.
To be moving our own abilities around. And it's like, shouldn't I just be like shooting a big draw spell or something? I don't know. Like, and then kind of explaining to somebody who might not be all that up to speed in the game about what I'm doing here. Well, this got targeted, so now I draw. But then I'm moving the ability over here, so then it draws and I get two treasures. And yeah, it just gets
it
really
like...
It
starts to sound like you're just making shit up at that point.
Yeah. So anyway, I draw 6 cards and I make 12 treasure.
Yeah. but I think this is a... I think this is... I mean, certainly like a faithful adaptation of the character.
Oh, a million percent.
Yeah. I think it's just like needs a bit of tweaking to lead to like fun, fair magic. Are you ready to move on to the next commander?
Yeah, that's a kooky one.
This one comes to us from Logan on Discord, and this is Brother Theodore. It's 3 blue black for a legendary creature, human monk. It's a 2/4 and it has... If a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, instead put it on top of its owner's library. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you manifest the top card of that player's library. So this is an interesting commander. I picked it in part because I just really love manifesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about this design?
Is this like Universes Beyond the Burbs?
Gotta look at the exact reference.
This one kind of gives me like what was the last iteration we had of Gisa?
Yeah.
Where they die and then instead of hitting the yard, I think they get decay on your side as a decayed token eventually. I think it's like at the end step or something. This is kind of what Remnant is reminiscent of it with some extra steps.
Yeah.
I really like the triggers here. I think, and this might be just me being, you know, a little too conservative, but I feel like we should somehow tie the second trigger, the manifesting part, to the creature dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like just automatically getting manifests, even independent of the first part. I mean, I think that's already happening with another card at, what is it, 7 mana, the prized amalgam or whatever it was.
The like ape. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It's pretty high up there because you're just kind of feeding off the top of people's decks. You get a 2/2 blocker attacker at the minimum. And then if it's a creature, you can warp it in. So I don't know if this a morbid trigger is appropriate here or something where it's like, okay, that creature died and that creature goes to your top. And if you don't deal with it by the time we get to your turn, well, then I'm going to manifest that creature, you know? Where here it's like, I could just resolve this dude and at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, I'm just starting to manifest the top of their player's library. And then that second, the first part is just, I don't know. Now the first part relates to the second.
Yeah. So basically, like, one issue might be that you're just getting a ton of free creatures every turn. And like, yeah, that is its own kind of reward. Like, you don't have to care so much about like setting up the manifest, although you certainly can. But it's just, you know, my cheaper like Verdant Force or whatever for in my command zone,
right,
might be enough to get there.
Yeah, and every once in a while, I'm going to catch something that's pretty good with the manifests. Like, I'm going to pick up something pretty good. It's just, yeah, a matter of time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's a if there's a way to make that manifest like. I think maybe we'd have to like increase his cost. Like, I don't want the focus to be so much on that. Although there is certainly a lot of benefits to splitting it like this. And
maybe make like, the manifest an activated, like you got to pay to grab the card now.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, that I like that idea. So like, you're not going to blindly manifest if there's an actual cost associated with it. You'll do it like when you either, you know, something's on top because you just killed it, or you did something else to set up their top card. So it's not just free value. You have to like be clever in order for it to be worthwhile.
Right.
That's good.
Then I wouldn't be so crazy about like the high, like a high mana. I mean, you could probably actually go down in the actual casting cost of this guy if there was some other mana barrier between you and getting the manifest.
Oh,
and
sure,
like you kind of listed here, I love the idea of Lantern Control. And this would be a good reason to roll that shell into a deck and the right colors for it, in my opinion.
And there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with, like, you know, if you've got like a Lantern of Insight or Field of Dreams or some way to see your opponent's top card, there's not only just like denying them draws, but there's fun stuff with like, well, even though that's not a creature, I'm going to manifest it, but I put like Blink Engines in my deck. I put like Thassa Deep Dwelling or something. So I can just flicker. Actually, let me just verify that Deep Dwelling doesn't return it under its owner's control.
Under its owner's control.
Under your control. Okay, so you can flip things face up for cheap, or like just take other permanent types and flip them face up with Thassa. I think there's a lot of play here. This is a pretty neat commander.
Yeah, there's something here for sure.
Yeah, I almost wonder. I don't even know if you need the like things die to the top of their library. I mean,
I kind of like that though, because that's such a weird place for a creature to end up. It, you know, like we're used to seeing creatures like, okay, well, they get exiled instead. That's like a way that the designers have already been trying to trip up creature death. There's a few legends that do that now, and just enchantments and what have you, but dunking them at the top, that is a weird place for creatures to end up. For a guy who, like, let's say I had a total game plan where I'm going to be looping a creature and I did not expect it to end up at the top of my library capping my draw, and then later on or some other way my opponent can interfere in with some kind of top deck manipulation, or in this case they're going to manifest it. I like that first part. It's just kind of marrying the two in a sensible way is what I'm trying to figure out with this one.
Okay. My thought is that it might lead to repetitive play pattern. Oh, actually, never mind. Opponent controls. Okay. Yeah, I guess it's fine then.
Oh, you mean like on our side where we're able to jump our creatures up there?
But it's because it's worded
as only opponent's control.
Opponent controls, yeah. So it's not an issue. It seems like a really neat commander. A lot of play. I'm already thinking about like blue spells, like, you know, put target creature on top of its owner's library and then manifest it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
cool,
cool
stuff. Or like scheming symmetry. And then you can break symmetry on it by like, okay, whatever they put on top, I'll just manifest that, and then I just got a cheap tutor.
Yeah, it's funny. All right, you're done with your scheming symmetry. Okay, well, I'm gonna destroy this creature, and now this is underneath. So
yeah,
it just gets pretty. I like it. It's kind of heady. I like this one a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. There's something here. Just trying to figure it out, like something that makes sense.
For sure. All right. Next, we've got several designs from the same set. Actually, these are coming to us from Johan, who's on our Discord. So Johan actually created an entire Game of Thrones Universes Beyond set. And what? So we've got a handful of commanders here that are all from that set. So let's start off with Ramsay, Bastard of Bolton. It's 2 blue-black for a 3/2 legendary creature human rogue with first strike. When Ramsay enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature. If you do, return target creature to its owner's hand. And whenever a permanent is returned to an opponent's hand, that player discards a card. So what do you think about Ramsay?
Well, I don't love Ramsay at all as a character.
Sure.
But the card, it's like recoil, like the card mm-hmm. recoil a little bit.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. It's I don't know, because there's a lot of triggers here. You get the bounce, but then there's opponent discards triggers, right? Like we've got those aplenty in black and even some colorless ones too. So you kind of leave it up to them of what card they're going to discard after you bounce. I think it's pretty wild, right? This is pretty good, pretty crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of neat things you can do with this. I definitely think it opens up a new archetype, because I don't think there's currently any commander that like really incentivizes like dedicated bounce, but there's a ton of fun stuff you can do here. So Warped Devotion is like essentially the same ability on an enchantment. So it's 2 black enchantment. Whenever a permanent is returned to a player's hand, that player discards a card. So you can double up on that. Other ways you can double up on it is if you use one of the like clones that doesn't keep the name or like isn't legendary. So like Spark Double or Irenicus's Vile Duplication. Once they're discarding multiple cards when you're bouncing things, it's just way more likely that they're, you know, going to empty their hand. They're going to be forced to discard the thing you put back there.
Yeah.
You definitely want like discard rewards like Geth's Grimoire and Waste Not. I think there's, yeah, just a lot of unique cards. Really interesting play style with this deck, because you're not really killing things. Like, I don't think you're going to run as many kill spells in this deck as you normally would, but you are controlling the board and getting, it's like 1-for-1 exchanges.
Bounce is usually pretty low CMC. Like we're able to get initiate a discard for like 1 mana. It gets around a lot of protection, like short of hexproof, they're indestructible. God. They're getting bounced. Like
there's Cyclonic Rift with this.
Oh yeah, I need to think about that, because it's a permanent.
Mm-hmm. I guess just like mass bounce, evacuation, that kind of thing. Perplexing Test. As long as you're not committing too many permanents to the board, you're going to break the symmetry on that like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, never mind. It's only opponents. So you've already broken the symmetry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, this seems really neat. There's also... Oh, another thing you could do. So... how many like symmetrical token makers are in this color identity? Because I kind of like the idea of giving my opponents tokens and then... bouncing and then they have to just discard cards.
Yeah, there's the Hunted Cycle. You'd have like the 2 there that comes to mind.
There's like Forbidden Orchard.
Right, you'd have Forbidden Orchard. Oh, that's gross. So they get the token, but it's just like discard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't... Ooh, yeah, that's not good. I don't like that.
Yeah, I think... this is a neat design. I don't know if it would be incredibly... I mean, it's probably like more fun to play against this than just like infinite spot removal spells. Like they actually have to put some work into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really neat design.
Yeah, like Toxril exists. So
yeah, good point.
In the same identity. At least this is kind of like, well, choose which one you're going to discard, but you're definitely like, your creatures and permanents aren't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the, like from you in that discard. And then, yeah, it's just like all the discard triggers. Your Megrims, your Geth's Grimoire, your Waste Knots. That's really what the deck is going to be probably waiting on to get its advantage after these bounces go off. And then, yeah, the big ones, I hadn't even thought of that, like Crush of Tentacles and Cyclonic Rift. It'll be pretty wild.
This is like a lot of cards, but I really like the idea of, gosh, what is the blue words? Like the word, okay, Words of Wind.
Yeah.
So two and a blue enchantment. Pay one. The next time you draw a card this turn, each player bounces a permanent they control to their owner's hand instead. So maybe if you get like Geth's Grimoire and Words of Wind out, it's like, so you do it once, you like skip your draw for the turn to do this.
Yeah.
Everyone returns something. Your opponents have to then discard, like three opponents each discard one card. You draw three cards. You can replace one or more of those with more Words of Wind. You just get...
Gross, dude. No.
Sounds fun.
Didn't take us very long to break this one.
it's cool. Hey, it's a new archetype. If people don't like playing against it, they can rule zero that shit.
yeah. Quit complaining. It's Ramsey. It's Ramsey Bolton. What'd you expect?
Exactly. You know that. You know what? Extra bonus points for this one because it's as miserable to play against as you would expect of Ramsey.
Yeah. And it's kind of a slow burn. You're like, I don't know. Is it that bad? Is he that bad? And then three episodes later, oh, I hate this guy and this deck.
Oh, perfect. Well, speaking of characters you love to hate.
No kidding.
Next, we've got Littlefinger. This is blue, black, red for a 1/1 legendary creature human advisor. Whenever an opponent shuffles their library, each other opponent discards a card at random. Then you draw a card and put a +1/+1 counter on Littlefinger. So what do you think of this design? It takes a minute to like figure out what's going on here.
I love the idea of having some trigger tied to people shuffling their library.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time they're up to no good if they're shuffling their library and the game has already begun. So I love that. I just don't like being punished as the other opponent at random. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not tutoring anything. Like, why am I getting hit with that and I have to discard at random? I think that's the piece that kind of throws me a little bit. Like, it's I get that the little fingerness is that we're trying to cause everybody to, like,
hate each other.
I guess, yeah, but it makes it really kind of, that would be really hard to do in a game of Magic, right? Like the source of my woe is this card right now, and I'm not mm-hmm. super into that.
It definitely takes a while to resolve, especially because like the first place my brain went with this was things like Winds of Change, where like each player shuffles their hand into their library and then draws that many cards. So what's going to happen there is you're going to get like each opponent is going to get one of these triggers. So each opponent is going to be like the other opponent for two of these triggers. So each opponent has to discard two cards at random.
Yeah.
You're going to draw three cards and you're going to get three counters on Littlefinger. But like resolving six instances of random discard is kind of annoying. And
Yeah. Right.
And also like if your Winds of Changing, if you're churning through your deck like this, you're going to be trying to do it like a bunch of times. And so it's just like, seems like it adds a lot of time to the game. And you're right, like it is weird that you're not really punishing the person who's doing the bad thing. It's everyone else who's getting punished. And also, and of course, like everyone's not only do you have the time sink of resolving random discards, like I gotta roll a dice six times
or some way of doing that, yeah,
but you're forcing the shuffle too, so everyone's shuffling a whole bunch of times. So like game of Magic with Littlefinger, like how much time are you, like what percentage are you actually going to be playing Magic, and what percentage of the time is just like doing these stupid bookkeeping game actions?
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Because shuffling does kind of get a little lame, right? Like, attack to anybody who just has too many fetches in their deck.
Yeah, and like gets, some people...
And the deck cutting, too. If you're in like an untrusted play group, you know? Mm. Like, okay, well, you cut my deck, well, you cut my deck, well, you cut my deck. If you're forcing the shuffle, which you almost have to.
Yeah, yeah, because otherwise, like, it might just never happen. And you're on color to force the shuffle. And also, like, one thing I'll also say, like, some people have small hands. Like, I know some people who just always ask other people to shuffle for them because they just can't
get their hands around 99 or whatever, 900. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
90 some odd cards.
Double sleeved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really funny card. I think it's powerful, but I think that like it will. I think it has some play issues, and I don't know how to address those.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm only liking is the when an opponent shuffles their library, we get something. I really like that. To me, maybe this might just be my limited idea about it, but to me, they were probably tutoring. Either tutoring for lands or they were tutoring for a card, and I would like to actually do something there. It reminds me of is it Psychic Surgery? Where when they're done, you get to look at the top two and exile one.
Yeah.
That's a neat card. I really like that card. I've never used it in a game, but I think about, you know, all the fetches and just people like getting in their library all the time.
Or like I would like Worldly Tutor or Vampiric Tutor.
Yeah, like I would like a way to kind of just like get in there, and that's the thing I like about this. But then the rest of it is like, I don't know if I'm really into the punishing the other players. I wasn't tutoring, man. Nick was. So I got to discard at random, and then they get a card, and then Littlefinger gets a little bigger. It's a pretty wild card.
Yeah. Neat design for sure. All right. We are moving on to the last commander, or should I say commanders. So this is a partner pair. It is Grey Worm and Missandei of Naaf. So Grey Worm is 2 and a red for a 3/3 legendary creature human soldier with partner with Missandei of Naaf, and it has first strike, and whenever one or more creatures you control attack, add that much colorless. Until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end.
Mm.
So Missandei of Naaf is a single blue mana for a 1/1 legendary creature human advisor, partner with Grey Worm, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type. Okay, what do you think about this pair of commanders?
So it's an Izzet identity pair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like Missandei's just there to make the colorless pip on the Grey Worm useful.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my take. Like, that's the only reason. And that's why it's probably only one mana. This feels pretty wild in this identity. Like, extra turns, extra combats feels pretty wild. And it doesn't feel... maybe red, I don't know. Are there a lot of red examples of it putting mana into your mana pool when you go into combat? There's
a couple, but like, I mean, I only know that because I like really pay attention for that kind of thing, but like Conduit of Storms from Eldritch Moon does that. There's like a handful of cards that do that kind of thing. I agree with what you said about like Missandei just feeling like she's just there to make Grey Worm's thing useful. I think that partner with commanders, I think ideally like each card should be doing something, and Missandei doesn't really accomplish anything. If Grey Worm gets, you know, trapped in the moon or turned into a tree or turned into an elk or whatever, then like Missandei is not going to be able to, you know, carry the rest of the deck on her shoulders. This does seem pretty strong. Like, getting mana from combat means you can funnel that, as you said, into like extra turns, extra combats. If you have aggravated assault and 5 attackers, you go infinite.
Yeah, you're like there.
Yeah. I wonder, aside from the flavor of like partner with, like, you know, these two guys are inseparable, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it would make more sense just to have this be like 2 red blue, Grey Worm and Missandei, and
like
it's
one of those,
just like the abilities of both.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, like, why? Like, can't you just add one man of any color? What?
Actually, yeah, good point.
Like, the other bit. And then you're basically on an infinite aggravated assault really quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you're kind of, that's kind of true anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea of giving red one more case for this. And I really like that we're staying colorless. It's the other piece where, because if it just stays colorless, then I think you're kind of reined in a little. It gives you something to solve, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then giving us the rest of the equation with the Missandei side of it, it's like, I already know what this deck's going to look like for myself. I'd just like to be able to, I'd like to try to solve it myself a little more, I think. That might just be me being persnickety, but yeah.
No, I think that's a good point. Like, I mean, I will say that it is difficult to assemble like enchantment based combos in this color identity. It's not easy to tutor form. But I do agree that like this could very easily be changed to not enable a one card combo if, as you said, like it didn't solve the mana type problem. It just added colorless. Then you could still get there eventually. Like if you have a Mycosynth Lattice and then an Aggravated Assault, like if you are doing that part yourself,
mm-hmm.
or some other way to filter the mana, Chromatic Orrery, I think, does it.
Yeah.
But then it's like, you know, two cards plus your commander, and that's totally fun and fair. And in colors that can't tutor for that stuff.
And even just leave it mono red.
Sure.
I'd be all right with that, where it's like, it's a mono red deck.
Yeah.
You know, it's low to the ground. I wouldn't be too triggered by like the CMC of being at three. Like it's only colorless, but we know where this person's going and it doesn't burn. So then it's like, well, even if our output's not, let's get an aggravated assault kind of going, that it's reward for attacking. I'm getting like a soul ring for every two or whatever, however you want to like wrap your head around it. Mm-hmm. So it's reward for attacking, which that exists. Absolutely. But I think in our format as of late, this is just my big, big, big opinion. I like rewards for combat in a format that it's kind of hard. It's hard to get it, you know, like it's hard to get it unless you're just, okay, I'm going in infinite combats or I'm taking infinite turns. Where here it's like, yeah, I have something kind of sustainable. I want to have evasive creatures that come out early and I'm just kind of mana rocking my way as I attack. I get these like colorless spells. And the rest is up to me to figure out like where to put that as far as how to take the game. So even if this is mono red, I think it would actually be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Seeing this makes me really wish we had more cards that used like colorless as a cost. Because then this would be like one of the few decks outside of like mono brown that could make use of those cards. But
what do you mean, like the wastes?
The things like, you know, Kozilek, the Great Distortion, or like Warping Whale, like those things that you can only cast if you have like a mana base that can support it, or just some other way to make a bunch of colorless. Anyway, let's
swing with this, and I'm bunch of tokens. You come at me, and then you drop Kozilek in your post main.
There we go. That's
okay. You deserve it.
All right, are you ready to move on to the next commander?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
Wait, so hang on. You said they did a whole set? Was you mean a set of legends or
no, like a complete set.
Even 99 so the cards that are all ice and fire. Whoa.
Yes. I know. I need to check out the whole file.
That's
Johan only submitted just like a handful of commanders for it, but actually let me ask him if we can link, if it's like somewhere public that we could link to so that folks who are interested in the set can check it out.
Yeah, that's a labor of love. I like that.
For sure. Moving on, this next one comes to us from Raphael on our Discord server. This is Private Benjamin Carmine. It is 1 white-blue for a 3/1 legendary creature human soldier and has ill-fated. You can pay a Phyrexian blue, so a blue mana or 2 life, to change a target of target spell or ability to Private Benjamin Carmine. And then whenever Private Benjamin Carmine dies, creatures you control get +2/+0 until end of turn, and you draw a card. So this is, I think, in the Gears of War series, but what do you think of this design?
Yeah, I had to look this one up. I was like, where have I seen this guy before?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the, what is the card? The Phyrexian.
Spellskite.
Spellskite. There we go. Yeah. It's like a Spellskite a little bit in the zone where you can just kind of grab spells and abilities. Does Spellskite grab abilities?
I believe so.
Okay. I think that's where I'm getting the Phyrexian blue from. And then that last piece of like it, the dude dies and everybody gets, your whole team gets triggered and you get to draw a card.
Yeah. I almost wish that it was, that it was like a different reward, or that you were able to like more easily abuse the ability. But the maybe redirect? That's maybe, yeah, maybe that. Well, so like, you know, I invest three mana and like two life in my commander, and I get to eat a removal spell and draw a card and pump my team. Although, like, you know, if he's on the battlefield, my opponent's probably not going to spend removal spell like on my turn, knowing that.
Yeah, good point. Because the timing's weird. So it's off turn. Do you really care about +2/+0?
So it's a lot of mana just to like stop a kill spell and draw a card.
Yeah.
I think that there's more opportunity for build around if you just tweak him a little bit. So if you like, say, if you had black in the color identity, you could add a bunch of like feign death effects, or like Malakir Rebirth. Those just like one or two mana instants, you know, choose your creature, when it dies, return to the battlefield.
Right. Yeah.
So that way you could like keep him around for longer, get more value off of his death trigger, like potentially fizzle multiple removal spells. So that's one thing you could do. Another thing you could do is just like make it so that rather than it being a death trigger, make it like whenever this becomes the target of a spell an opponent controls, because or even just when this becomes a target of spell. Because then you could do something real fun. You could change, like my opponent casts a Doomblade on something. I use Ill-Fated to change the target to Private Benjamin Carmine. Because it's becoming the target, I draw a card. And then I cast like a Loran's Escape or like a God's Willing or just some sort of like one mana cantrip. Target creature gets protection or indestructibility or hexproof or something. So then that Doomblade gets fizzled and I draw another card from it being targeted. So that seems kind of fun.
Kind of goes back to that weird redirect guy up there where it's like we're really kind of hoping our opponents have the appetite to use targeted removal in the meta. Otherwise we're not really able to like kind of seize the initial, like getting it, get any inertia out of what we're doing with this commander.
Well, then you can still have like the heroic. Well, actually it wouldn't be exactly heroic because heroic's worded slightly differently, but you could still have that gameplay of, you know, you're still going to have your own cantrips that you can spend on this guy. You don't necessarily have to count on your opponents doing it. If it's just like whenever it becomes a target of spell ability, then okay, I'll run a bunch of like Niveus Wisps and Cerulean Wisps and just like one mana cantrips and just kind of play it like a feather deck sort of.
Yeah. 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 There's something here too. Man, redirects kind of itch the brain. Like this one's, when you start thinking about redirecting abilities and giving a reward for it, it kind of sets me down like a, it itches my brain a bit. I'm trying to think about that.
Yeah, I think there's not really many commanders that kind of play in this space, and so I'm glad that we got multiple people who like noticed that and were like, how can we design a commander to enable people to mess with this kind of gameplay? Okay, do you want to move on to the last commander?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, this comes to us from Micah on our Discord server. This is from, he did a whole bunch of designs based around characters from Elden Ring.
Hell yeah.
So this one is Morgott the Omen King. It is one green white for a legendary creature, demigod. It's a 2/3 with double strike and vigilance, and it has Holy Blade. Whenever Morgott deals combat damage, put a +1/+1 counter on him.
Just combat damage, not even to a player.
Yeah. I like that, the combination of that and like vigilance. So he's always going to be a blocker, and if you attack into him, then he just gets even bigger.
This seems pretty wild, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Double strike, 2/3. I'm wondering, and this isn't me wanting this, but I'm betting that were somebody from design to wanted to take a stab at something adjacent to this, I bet that double strike doesn't come online until Morgott's of a certain size.
Hmm.
Or some other condition. It seems like double strike is either you're going to start out as a 1/1, feels like they kind of rein in the power, or it doesn't come online until some other condition is met lately. Or, okay, they have double strike if this.
I don't mind the initial double strike because there's two things I'm thinking about here. One is that, like, I talk about this a lot, but I usually look for like four things when evaluating a Voltron commander.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is like really high, like damage potential for the mana cost. So like high damage to cost ratio or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know he's got that covered for sure. But then I also look for like haste, some sort of built-in protection and evasion. So he doesn't have any of those last three things. So
that's true.
I'm okay with like it being pretty aggressive. Maybe you could drop his power by one, just have him be a 1/3 to start, and that's probably fine. But another thing I like about just having double strike there from the beginning is it does give you opportunities for like combat damage effects. So you can slap a Mask of Memory on this guy, you can slap a Keen Sense, or whatever, the
Snake Umbra.
Sixth Sense. Yeah, Snake Umbra. So there's opportunities for that kind of thing too. There's also like a lot you can do with +1/+1 counters. There's a lot of things like hardened scales that just make it so he grows twice as fast.
That's true. The counter support in this ID is pretty well established.
Mm-hmm. And then what else could you do? There's at a certain point, and maybe this is like kind of win more or something. So there's going to be like extra counters in the sense that there are numbers of counters you can have on him that don't affect his clock.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's has 10 power, let's say he's got like 9 power or like 9 power, he's not going to be able to kill you in one hit.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially those other counters he has on him are excess, and you can use them for other things. So like there's that one mana guy from, I think, Crimson Vow. It's like pay 3 and remove 2+1/+1 counters from among creatures you control, destroy target artifact or enchantment. There's a couple other things like that where you can just use your counters as
there's
resources.
Stuff in black. There's that Abzan enchantment, but
we're not
Retribution,
like
a mono black
of the ancients. Yeah,
you're right. There's stuff to. So you're saying like it gets to a point where you have an excessive number of counters. Is there a way that we can put it to work because mm-hmm. we're already either above the clock or really not quite there? Like we're between the 3 or 2 hit club.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yeah. So that might be something you can play around with, but it might be fiddly. Because you never know if like you're going to top deck something that would have gotten you across that threshold. And then, oops, I spent, I don't know. Maybe.
This might be just me thinking like, I wonder if that would be okay to just even have on the commander. I like the idea of giving the player, it's really big, but these abilities of converting the counters into something else mm-hmm. are really tantalizing. So what do I go for? You know, like am I out of hand? Am I running aground, or am I feeling like I'm going to lose him anyway. I'm going to lose my commander. I don't know. I like that. Like where you're going with it.
Yeah. I like that idea too. I think that would give him maybe a little bit more depth, because right now he's just like extremely Voltron-y. He says like, send me at your enemies, but, giving you a little bit more to do, I like that as well. Maybe like, I'm trying to think something that would be like flavorful for him. I'll leave that to Micah or anyone else who wants to take a crack at this. But
yeah, the art they chose for this is like, it feels like it's right out of Magic.
That's
a good one. I would get on an Elden Ring Universes Beyond so fast.
Man, I saw somebody posted, like, they basically did Universes Beyond reskins of the Wilhelt Commander deck, but it's all Bloodborne.
No.
oh my God, it was so cool. Like, the art that's out there for Bloodborne is just very good. And like,
yeah,
the theme was just perfect for it.
That Eldritch bunch of like turn of the century kind of thing. That would hit it.
And any last thoughts on Morgott before we move towards the end of the episode?
No, I think it's a... I think I got freaked out by the double strike, but now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think I'd be too terrified of this guy. He doesn't have evasion innately. I think once I saw Rancor hit this, I'd be kind of wringing my hands trying to figure out what to do. But I don't know. Double strike, I think, is just a really strong ability. You can tie a lot to it, right? That on, especially on damage stuff where it's like I draw or I get more counters.
Yeah, and that's already kind like of a sword of X thing. And Y on this guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's just, there's so many on combat damage triggers, and this thing is, yeah, I'd like kind of the what we were brainstorming is like, can we give this thing a reason to remove counters? And I think they'd have to be as good as I potentially kill my opponent, you know? Like, I need to drop counters because I'm either out of hand or I need to do something. I like the idea of kind of having that quandary.
Yeah, I like player. And just like forcing people to think about the clock of their Voltron commander is really neat to me. I don't think people maybe people do, but like there is potentially waste. You know, if you have somebody who's at like 20 commander damage and then you hit him for 8 with your commander, it's like, well, it's kind of a waste. Like, there's, you didn't need all that damage, so ways to convert that into something useful seems cool to me. It's like an edge to grind.
That is cool.
Okay, well, that is the very last design we were going to talk about today. Thank you to everyone who submitted designs for this episode. We do plan to do more custom commander episodes in the future. It's kind of like a once every 6 months kind of thing. So if your design didn't get featured this time, please keep submitting. There will be more opportunities for you in the future. And Andy, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. This was really fun to talk about all these designs with you, and I'm glad we got another opportunity to collaborate.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really didn't know what to expect for an episode like this. But I had a lot of fun really actually kind of getting my brain moving in a direction I'm not used to. I do kind of like, I don't know, maybe it shows in like when you review cards like this how either conservative or nutty you are about design. Like, maybe you just like got this tinfoil hat where you think it's a little too strong, but it's really fun to try to evaluate something that the could be's, like these redirects or that bounce commander. Like, that's just I just don't have a real world analog for something like this too often.
Yeah, and it also just like is fun to see places that the format could go or styles of decks that could exist. Like, I wouldn't mind like just printing out copies of some of these commanders and seeing if I can like rule zero to get my playgroup to let me play them, just so that I can play a type of deck that normally isn't possible in Commander. Like, you know, a curse deck with a different color, with this other color identity, or this like tapping deck with Cyrano or any of these other designs. Like, all of them kind of enable a new type of deck. And if your playgroup is very permissive, as you know, I'm blessed to have one, it's just new ways to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a few here I'd actually try to see what I could do with them. Maybe like just put a deck list together and goldfish it for a minute to get an idea. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, drawn to a close, Andy, if folks want to find out more about your show, the Legendary Creature Podcast, or if they just want to get in touch with you, what's the best place for people to reach you?
Well, yeah, I co-host a podcast called the Legendary Creature Podcast with my friend Kyle. That's it. I don't think we have any social media anymore. Kyle has been kind of managing that, and he decided to unhook it all. So really just come by and give us a listen. We're both huge fans of Nick and Zach and their podcast. So we actually bring up this podcast quite a bit on ours. We're in love with your work, Nick. So, and Zach too. But yeah, well, if you want to give us a listen, just find us on anywhere you would find the Commander Theory, Spotify, any kind of podcast thread. We'll be there hopefully.
Yeah. I strongly recommend the Legendary Creature Podcast. You guys are friends of the show. Your podcast is just so funny. The production quality is amazing. You just have like such good chemistry with each other. It just feels like, you know, hanging out with you guys for a couple hours, and it's always a really good time. So definitely check them out if you get the chance. But with that, I'm going to draw this episode to a close. Thanks everyone for listening. And thanks again, Andy, for coming on the show.
Yeah.
You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Commander Theory.
And on Twitter, I am at Fat Bartleby.
You can also email us at commandertheory@gmail.com. Our theme song is Lincoln Continental by Nick Cage. You can check him out on SoundCloud.
And if you're interested in some other creative projects I'm working on, I have a band you can check out. We are a pink punk, pop punk band called The Have-Nots, all one word, like cosmonauts. You can listen to all of our music for free right now. You can just head over to thehavenots.bandcamp.com. That is thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. And check us out. Let me know what you think.